Manhattan cocktail. Yep. Have you ever had one?
Yeah, I love Manhattan.
Oh, what they're so good.
It's a whiskey and a there's a vermouth. It's a sweet vermouth and whiskey and a lemon.
Orange. And bitters. Angostura bitters.
Yeah, that's really, really good.
It is.
But
so
keeping
good.
Vermouth is a pain.
Yeah, and I buy there's like $6 vermouth. But I buy the $22 vermouth because it's just.
But it's sometimes you don't make enough of them. You don't use vermouth that often. Then you use a little bit, and it's like refrigerated, right?
No, I drink Manhattans every night. Like that's just all I make now.
So you just have it on a roll, yeah. Because you know, it's not always you get a set of this and this thing, and then you get something that you make one time for something.
Yeah, you're right. I go through phases.
That's why I don't keep vermouth.
I'll get in like a Negroni phase, which
I like Negroni.
It uses vermouth as well.
I mean, I like the vermouth cocktails, but I've never been in a flow to justify to not have them go bad.
I
like them.
They're so good.
Well, we certainly gave Marshall a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no, I get it. That's great.
All right, we back on.
Yeah. Okay, I was thinking now that we're, here in the club, it's just knuckle breakers only. So that's now that we were talking, you remember we were talking about kayfabe and all that. Those I call them just the marks. So this is just people that are in on the deal from here.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's just how we are public.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the public, yeah. But behind.
Right. But here, trust me, this is the real me. Okay.
This is the real fucking me right now.
Okay.
This is real shit now.
Okay. That other. Yeah. That's just a show.
Lesnar, I want to talk to you. So I've been following this Freddie Freeman thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what? It makes me feel really sad. I think he really wanted to stay in Atlanta. So Matt, I don't know if you know, but Freddie Freeman, first baseman.
I saw it on Twitter, but I don't know the story.
I mean, I could break the whole thing down for you, but go ahead with what you're going with here.
But basically, all I wanted to say was his agent, it's going around now. Okay, let me just say this. First of all, he got a good offer from the Dodgers, and Atlanta's offer was pretty similar, but maybe a little less or something, but it was really close.
One last year, but higher money per year. A little bit, I think. I can't remember exactly.
I mean, and he was really going to go down for sure as it maybe – like the one of the greatest of all time. Like I think because all the shit that's going down with like Chipper Jones, a lot of people don't like him or say he's, you know, said not Braves fans, but I'm saying outside of the Braves. I mean, he gets talked shit on him, like kind of like
bit,
being a racist or something. Or
no,
he made some
jokes, but he then apologized for him. He made some jokes about like gators in the Rio Grande. But no, that's the funny about Chipper. Chipper's a big time redneck, and I mean, obviously a Trump supporter, but he really doesn't. Right. He doesn't say too much.
But Freddie Freeman is all American.
He's from Orange County. His mom died when he was 11 years old. And
right. I mean, he's just
tremendous baseball player. Tremendous.
And you just think he's a nice guy. He's like a Devin nice.
Yes,
exactly. You know what I mean?
He seems sincere. That's right. Yeah.
So it kind of broke my heart because he recently just fired his agent, and then it started going around that his agent didn't tell him the whole deal or was trying to get or whatever.
Casey Close is his agent.
Doug Gottlieb said that the agent withheld information, and now he's getting sued.
Yeah.
The agent is going to sue Doug Gottlieb for, defamation or whatever. But it makes me sad because he's in L.A. and actually having a good year. Like crushing it. Statistically, murdering.
Murdering. No, Freddie Freeman is one of the most consistent ball players. He's never hit 40 home runs, but he always hits 300. He always hits 25, 35 home runs.
Right.
And produces. He just produces, drives in runs when it means something.
Super solid. Right.
Plays good defense. He'll be a
Hall
of Famer.
Very solid player.
He's a Hall of Fame baseball
player.
Yeah.
100%.
Hall of Fame baseball player.
And for the Braves to lose him, I think that's really bad. I think the Braves should have done all they could to keep him because I think he's the face of the franchise.
I have thoughts about that, but yeah. I mean, I could break that down for you. It's not as big of a deal as you would think. And the way – so our general manager or
Toby, you're letting him ruin everything.
Sorry.
Destroy your family and everything.
I'm sorry.
About to break down.
I'm sorry. All right, never mind. I won't do it. I won't make it that podcast. I'm sorry.
You can bring it back up at the end of the podcast while Matt and I slowly slide off camera. But all I wanted to say was it's sad that he could have.
Freddie had a chance to be all-time Braves God.
Yeah.
Chipper, with Hank Aaron, with Greg Maddux, with Tom Glavin. Yes, right. Dale Murphy, he had a chance.
I mean, he'll just be in line of another great player, the Dodgers. You know what I mean? Like
I think he'll probably retire with the Braves. I think he'll come back age 39 and do a farewell.
I think so too, but I mean, is there no way they could get him back? That's the thing.
So we signed Matt Olson, who's for 8 years or whatever, who's younger. He's murdering. No, he's every bit as good as Freddie Freeman in many ways. So,
well, shit. All right. Well, that's enough sports. Other sports? Any other sports?
You're right. No, it is sad. Freddie Freeman cried the entire weekend he came back to Atlanta. He came back to Atlanta for the first time when the Dodgers played there. He cried the entire fucking weekend.
God.
It was very sad.
I mean, it's just crazy. It makes me really sad that, like, he doesn't even want to be in L.A. You know what I mean? Like,
he's
had to move his whole family. And
well, he already lived there, but whatever.
With the state tax and stuff like that, I mean, the money, I don't even know if it works out any better.
Chipper Jones did an interview about it, and Chipper Jones basically told him, do not fuck with the Braves front office. They will move on from you. Like, they don't – they do not fuck around the way that you're trying to fuck around. So, anyway.
Fuck. All right, let's do some damn news. Right. I got a couple music damn newses.
You got any more Freddie Freeman?
No more Freddie Freeman.
All right.
I was gonna say another sports news. What do y'all think about this Brittany Griner thing? Like, it's really –
crazy.
I don't know
really
anything about it.
Because there's – it's like almost nobody's talking about it hardly, or there's some people that are just the sentiment of what she gets what she deserves or something. Why were you in Russia with weed? I'm like, no, that is just all.
That's cool.
I mean, I cannot believe that she had a little bit of weed on her and is in prison in Russia.
And what does she do?
She's a basketball player.
WNBA?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just a political thing because she had a vape cartridge. Right. In her bag, as far as I understand, like a vape cartridge, you know, and she, whatever. And I mean, I promise you that last time I flew home from Mexico, last time we were in Mexico, I came through customs, whatever, and just after I got my bags and everything, I found a vape cartridge that was in my backpack before I had left. I didn't know I'd taken it the first time. I didn't know I had brought it back.
Fuck.
Do you know what I mean? I came through Mexico customs with that, and I thought, fuck, that's ridiculous.
That could have been,
you know, I thought that was dangerous.
You would have been in a Mexican prison.
Well, I would, you know,
when you get out.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that's the level of error she made is one I've made, you know.
Yeah.
And we've had show offers in Russia, and it's just who knows.
She's wealthy.
But
it's a political thing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying it's a political thing. Like, it's just like.
So, and LeBron said something like, does she even want to come back or something? Did I see that right?
No, that can't be right.
Look it up. I think I saw something about LeBron.
LeBron on Brittany Griner?
Yeah.
That can't be. He didn't say that.
I mean, but she's, you know, she's in jail and whatever. And they're just going to, you know, like, it's just a thing. As far as I would imagine it, that's a political prisoner or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's just a high profile person and you can hold them and then you have a chip in a game.
And you know, Obama could have got her back. Biden can't get her back. I think Obama would have got her back.
What is the status of it?
LeBron said, now how can she feel like America has her back? I would be feeling like, do I even want to go back to America?
So, you could really mischaracterize LeBron there in Lunsford.
So what was he? Yeah. Well, no, I don't know anything about it. What was he saying?
But you made it seem like he was like, shit.
I thought, hold on. No, hold on. I mean,
LeBron's saying America hasn't helped her at all, and she has every right to go. Even, you know, obviously, he's saying if she can get out of jail, that why would she want to come back to America?
Here's what I swear to God. Off the top,
oh, my God.
My ignorance. Hold on.
No,
I'm happy.
Ignorance.
I'm listening.
Apologize,
Lunsford. I'm living and learning. I 100% thought it had to do with Roe v. Wade. I 100% thought it about Roe v. Wade and guns. Gun control or something like that.
Oh, you thought LeBron was talking about Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, like would she even want to come back to America?
Oh, you didn't know it was about her weed.
I didn't know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, still. It's kind of crazy, but that is wild that he said that. And then guess who chimed in on LeBron's comment? No, Kurt Schilling.
Dude, he is out there, man.
He's way out there.
So you know what Kurt Schilling wrote? I know this may seem like a stretch, but something like 300 million people understand obey the fucking law. Why is that such a challenge?
That's so ridiculous.
I mean, he said, and why on earth should she not pay the penalty for breaking another country's laws? Come on, Kurt. Oh, my God. And people are just, I mean,
he's out of his mind.
I mean, he's out of his
great
pitcher.
Murdered.
He's got 500 hearts on that post. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The heel is always very popular.
That's crazy.
Like, Kurt Schilling, on some level, understands people are going to obviously hate what he wrote, and those people are still fans. They might be dislike him and might be trying to crush him.
That's what we got to really figure out here. What is this? It's not a fan, but it's how does that work? What
it's
is it?
Like it's
like,
guy,
what is that?
When he played baseball, it was the same time.
The people that you love to hate, where you pursue your hatred in them. What is that called? It's not a fan, but it's very bizarre, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
It's where you put effort into a one-way relationship of somebody you dislike.
It's haters.
What
but
is
it's
that?
Way deeper than that. Yeah.
That's weird, you know?
Yeah.
But that's what a lot of the activity is. You just... What is that?
I always thought that about atheists. I always thought atheists spend their whole life thinking about God, probably more than me. But I know they don't believe in God or whatever, but they're addicted to it on some level. They got to have it, man. It fuels them. It gives them energy. It gives them life. Takes them to that place, like Lunster said, that music did.
Yeah.
It's something about that. It's kind of wild. I mean, don't you think Trump supporters and Trump haters are both very loyal to him in a way. I mean, it's just crazy. Like, I mean,
loyal to him in a way. I mean, in an inverse, but it's like the antimatter and matter. Like, it's like the negative fan. It's like a negative. It's a fan.
It's like being famous
fan.
Or infamous.
But it's like you almost wish he was on your team. It was like a
you can make somebody.
Right,
like he was not liked in baseball. But
it's the anti-hero. That's nasty, though. To me, that feels nasty. It's like now we just like Tony Soprano because, well, we're fucking bad guys.
Yeah.
What did you think? It's like that.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like a fantasy that you're a good, like you're a successful bad guy is actually what you really do want.
Yes, that is what people want. That's why they
love. Like you're
Dexter.
Not trying to be the hero. You're trying to be like the actual bad
anti-hero
guy that wins.
Yeah. I mean, don't people like Lex Luthor? Don't they really like him? You know what I mean? Like, isn't he the reason why you even think you can watch Superman? Just somebody that always does good? That was the whole Mr. Glass thing. Like,
yeah.
That's why he's so important. The evil villain or whatever is, of course, the most
You got
to
have
important.
It.
You like Robert De Niro in Heat more than Al Pacino.
Yeah.
You do.
100%.
You like him more. He makes more sense to you.
Right.
Robert De Niro.
Just think of how good the Wet Bandits are.
Oh, yeah.
You got to have it. What's the Home Alone without the Wet Bandits?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, we don't.
You ain't watching it. You think it's going to be a Home Alone 2 without the Wet Bandits?
I mean,
Sticky
Kevin,
Bandits.
Kevin's
Sticky
a
bandits.
Little shit. He's a little shit.
Yeah, you put him up without them, and you said, that's fucked up. You know, nothing. No movie.
Yeah, he's saying he's a shitty kid. You don't. Yeah. I mean, they're the only reason. Marv. Good Lord. All right. So let's see.
I can't wait for Christmas. Wow. I can't wait for Christmas. I just want to watch Home Alone.
I know. Me too. All right. So this comes from metalinjection.com.
What is that site?
I don't know. I just found it somehow. I don't even know. I got
metal
two.
Music?
Yeah, I guess it's okay. Metal music.
It's a metal zine.
Yeah, it's just it is a metal zine. Okay. System of a Down drummer thinks that COVID and the invasion of the Ukraine are about money. That's all he thinks they're about. Drummer John Dolmayan. You know his drum in Lunsford?
I mean, I'm aware. Yeah, I've listened to a lot of the songs on the radio.
But I mean, is he's not a drummer that you like try to model your drumming after?
What? Toby, have you ever listened to me play drums actually or never? Always sat on the bus. You've never watched me even play drums. I play drums for Matt and Toby. You never once turned around to see what I was doing.
I heard you and when I played on stage with you, for sure. But anyway, John Dolmayan, I guess is his name, says all about money and there's a game of chess being played between real positions of power. These comments are pretty insensitive, is what Metal Injection says, given that Ukrainian citizens are currently in the streets dying for their country, and maybe now isn't exactly the time to play the whole the powers that be don't care about you. So Metal Injection is kind of, this is why I wanted to read this, because he just said what he thought. And then they immediately take that and make the argument about he doesn't care about Ukrainians at all, right? Even though he says it's about money, he says, and just like that, COVID will slowly go away. This is and has always been about money. COVID was about money. Ukraine is about money. Resources equal wealth, stability, and power. There are games of chess being played by those in real positions of power. And we like to think we're pawns, but the truth is we're not even on the board. Now, my question to you is, first of all, this news article tries to portray him as a bad guy because he said his thoughts, which I don't appreciate that. I think that's not what he's saying. Of course, he cares about the people who suffered through COVID or had family members that died or the Ukrainians being killed. That he said nothing to the contrary of that. But then secondly, that's how news is reported, even at metalinjection.com. And then secondly, I kind of agree on some level there that there is games that are being played, and it would be silly and foolish to not think that. Like, I mean, literally in the last 10 years, everybody was against Big Pharma, and now it's like everybody's pro Big Pharma or something. Like, I mean, just the way things are, there's some kind of thing there. I mean, there's some kind of, it's not just let's save people from COVID, and let's just, you know, I mean, Vladimir Putin is playing some kind of game of control and power, and it's deadly. It's horrific. But, I mean, that's not outrageous to say.
Yeah, I mean, it all seems games, you know, games in a way for whatever it is. It's you understand that you're being, it's not about you. They're not trying to figure out for you whatever it is that's happening. You're, you know, just, we're just, like, you get that thing of, like, you used to think, you get more of a sense of like the classical thing of like, oh, we're the other class, so we're just, we're not the ones that's considered really here. Yeah. That's not what it is. There's other people playing bigger games than we're in.
Serge chimed in and said he agrees a lot about Armenian stuff. He says him and his bandmate agree a lot about Armenian stuff, for example, and a lot of family stuff and a lot of other things and a lot of personal stuff. But I don't love and respect his American political views. I don't love and respect his American political views. So that's probably some issue where the fucking drummers in the back sound like
crazy.
A Fox
News. That.
And Serge is over like, oh, shit, he got a fan who's over there talking about this shit again. You know, I mean, I bet that does cause some issues.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's funny. And he's not and I guess that band must be a pretty good band though, like they haven't changed members or anything, and he's not that good of a drummer, but you don't get the sense that they would could replace him, but you don't, he's not that popular of a drummer,
right?
But he's part of that unit for sure. Yeah. So that's pretty neat that that's actually pretty together. Cool, right?
Well, because they're an ethnic unit.
It's pretty cool though.
They're Armenian.
Yeah.
So it's like we just stick together.
Yeah.
It's very cool that Lunsford, we played with them in Mexico City at a festival, and it was
that's
really crazy.
Get paid?
No, we Well, yeah, I think we didn't get paid. Yeah,
yeah, we definitely did. We went to Mexico,
but we went. But we went though. They invited us, and we did go, and we did play there with System of a Down and others. But no, we did not get paid. But they told us they would pay us. Right. So, like, most of it was good. Just the actual, we didn't get the money yet.
Right.
So, but they, either way,
you're holding out hope.
Okay. Either way, it was like, it was every Slayer was playing.
I'm going to get this for you. Don't worry. I'm going to get this money for you.
Well, our booking agent said we would still get it still.
Yeah, don't you worry.
That's last time.
I'm going to get this money for you. Yeah, and that was pre-COVID.
They're going to have another festival, and next time they're going to have a spot. Anyway, I actually don't even care because it was like, I wouldn't have gone for free, but I am glad I went, and it did happen. You know, we were there, and like me and Devin went and watched Stone Temple Pilots on side stage before System of a Down played, and it was just
their lead
this,
singer was just a goof.
That was crazy. It was one of those big festivals like you see on, like you think of a South America or Mexico or whatever, and it was so far from the hotel. Like it took forever to get like 2 hours in traffic and all these weird villages to get to this far out place, you know, like Cornerstone is or something. Like it wasn't in the city, and it was like there was no paths to even get to the stages, and it was all mud and people every direction, and they just like honk the horn and try to get us to a stage eventually, and it's like it's totally insane. And we get the, you know, we go and play on that stage and all that stuff, and then we're back there, and it's mud everywhere. Toby had these new shoes that were brand new white shoes, and we had to haul the
new white shoes. I took them off, and just my feet were cold and wet.
The shuttle guy was driving our van. We got stuck. We just got stuck in the mud at some point, and that was as far as we could go to where the stages were.
Yeah, so we just got
and it was
out,
in
walked.
The crowd, and we had to get the gear, and we weren't like we just simply didn't make it to where the tents and stages were.
I mean, it was like the mud in Neverending Story where the horse gets stuck in. We were trying to just get through. I mean, it was awful,
but it was so fun
because it's like nobody gave a shit, and it was so cool. I love Mexico so much. God, I love it so much.
It was
the
best.
Mexico City.
So we eventually got there.
It's huge.
And we played the stage, and it was great. It was awesome. Everything was great. And this, you know, across from us, Bush is playing.
As soon as we were done, Bush is playing.
And you can see them. And we play, and then they play in the same air. The sound comes back toward, you know. So it was totally amazing. And
Moon wine again.
And then by the time we get over and go to catering, all this stuff, and we come back, and it's Stone Temple Pilots, and then it's going to be System of a Down. And it was like Stone Temple Pilots were back there, so we talked to them.
Wow.
We stand on the side of the stage, and it's only like me and Devin and two other human beings on it. And then the crowd is the biggest, like, it's Stone Temple Pilots in Mexico crowd. Or whatever.
Wow.
About to be System of a Down is the next band after that. I think it was, I don't know, there's one other, what was the other big band on the ping pong stage after
Jerry
that?
Jerry Cantrell Band.
Oh, it was Alice in Chains and Alice then Chains. System
Did Deftones
of a Down.
Not play on that one too? I thought there was one where y'all was paid for.
We also went to a festival in Texas.
Oh, okay. With Deftones.
At the border.
Near the border where we played with the Deftones and did not get paid for that. That's a separate time where we were near the border of Mexico, went and played an awesome show with awesome bands.
But our booking agent said he was going to get us that money.
But that one also is pending.
Yeah, said he's going to get it.
Did that booking agent start with a T and end with an R?
No. Okay. I don't think. Maybe it did back then, but either way, that was like Beartooth didn't get paid that night. Like ever, you know, it happens.
Yeah, it was bad.
But so at that one, we're just backstage, and it's like I talked to the Stone Temple Pilots guy. Just talked to him.
Like you talked to
Scott
Weiler?
Just crazy. No, not Scott Weiler.
Wait, was he dead?
He's dead.
He's been dead.
See, that's the weird thing about the Stone Temple Pilots.
I didn't know
when
it was.
Super weird. Oh, yeah. No, yeah, it's this like impersonator. It's not an impersonator. It's just like a cool guy or something from the mall or something. It's like he's a weird, he wears sunglasses and he's
like
not trying
tries to,
to
dance kind of, but it's bad.
It's not,
not
good.
Like
it's
Scott
not
Weiland.
Good. But he sounds fine or whatever, but it's like, it's totally not cool. But it's cool enough for me to watch the other three guys do the thing that they do that is very formative for me. So I thought that was incredible. And then I'm talking to, you know, Robert and Dean DeLeo. Back just behind the tents or whatever. And they're just out and whatever. Allison Chains is there. And you know, and we talked to Allison Chains people because they were, you know, we did Soundwave with them or whatever. I think we talked to them or whatever. But then it's like, remember, we were super worried we're not going to be able to get back because there was no show because the mud and all that stuff.
And the rain and everything, like, scary.
Yeah, and this is like just at supper time or whatever. And then they come and just take all of the people, Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots and Emery and NOFX and whatever. And they just say, they just come and clear us the fuck out because System of a Down is pulling up in these six black Escalades driving right into backstage, like some whole other level of thing that was nowhere related to Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots or whatever. Right. They were with like, get these people out of here. Here comes System of a Down. And it was like these Escalades, and they just come straight back, and you know, like the big deal. It was crazy.
That's funny. I drove Scott Weiland in an Uber right before he died.
Did you really?
Really?
I sure did. Yep.
Did you talk to him at all?
No. It was weird. It was weird. You could tell he had a bunch of newer people around him, newer enablers. You know what I mean? Man. Like you could tell they weren't part of the crew, the old longtime crew. It was weird. So he was out of his mind.
How old was he? Probably in his 50s, you know?
Late 40s, maybe early 50s.
Yeah. 40s or 50s. It's crazy because he would probably still be making music and things would be. But I mean, did he live the way he wanted to? That's what I've always wondered. Like, did he live the way he wanted to, or was he actually trapped in this addictive cycle that ruined his life? Or did he live the way, like, was it fun or was it bad and sad? Like, you know what I mean? Because I would say a lot of people would say a decent amount of their drug time maybe was fun or good, but then it got really bad, you know? And I know a lot of people say it was always bad, but I wonder, is his life just a story of addiction and addictive cycles and sad, or is there a way to look at it that he lived how he wanted to, even with drugs and everything, and that's just how it ended? I don't think you can look at it that way, I guess. But I think that's possible, but I don't think you could actually just go there. I don't know.
He didn't look good when I met him.
Really? He looked not happy?
I drove a lot of famous people. It was kind of cool.
Shit. They tip good?
I don't remember. The girl from Chasing Amy, what's her
face? Would remember if it was good. You know, you're like, holy shit, Scott Weiland left me $100. You would remember that.
Yeah, you're right.
It must have been maybe whatever.
Yeah.
$2.
Well, I mean, he didn't order it. He didn't order the Uber. Sure. That's the other thing. I drove Marilyn Manson in a hotel shuttle one time. That was cool.
All, like, dubbed up on makeup and stuff, or is it just normal?
No, it was, like going to a show.
No way.
Took him to the theater. Yeah.
Wow. Did he talk at all?
No. And I was specifically told, do not. Like.
Who told you that?
So I was working at a high-end hotel in Nashville right after we moved here.
Yeah.
The Hutton Hotel.
Yeah.
And I was doing valet. Oh. And we had a hotel shuttle, and Marilyn Manson was – Paul McCartney stayed there, fucking Nora Jones. Like, I mean, it was a boutique high-end hotel that you could slip in and out of with And so Marilyn Manson – my boss was like, hey – because he knew I was in the music industry. So they were like, you'll know how to handle this, I guess, right? Or something like that. It's like, hey, you're going to drop Marilyn Manson. You just need to, like, not say anything. Don't talk. Don't look at him. Like, nothing.
Wow.
And I drove him to a War Memorial Auditorium. Yeah.
How long of a drive was that?
About 10 minutes.
Did you play music, or was it dead silent in there?
Silent.
What? That would have been so awkward. Silent. You didn't think to turn on music?
Nope.
God, you should have turned on Marilyn Manson music. That would have been so good.
Oh, no, I should have turned on Reliant K. Marilyn Manson ate my girlfriend.
Man, shit. I would have.
Do you remember Chelsea would say about Marilyn Manson that worked for him? I used to date a girl that was his assistant. And she would say how he would break TVs and stuff like that. Like he would like pitch a fit and do something. And like throw stuff at a TV and break it, and then pout about it. That's basically like what he's like. Like for somebody you know that works for him on tour, that's kind of what his character is like. If that makes sense, you know what I mean. She would have to like set his room up a certain way, and then he would like to pitch on when he was in bad moods, do break things and whatever. That's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know,
wow.
That's the guy. Yeah.
That's so fun. He's in trouble too now, right? Didn't he get in trouble for like
something?
It's the lady from Westworld, right?
Yeah, Rachel Wood. Yeah, yeah. He used to date Evan Rachel Wood. Can you believe she said
he might have raped her. I don't know for that for sure, so I could be totally wrong about that. I don't know, but he said some kind of manipulation or something. Yeah, allegedly.
It's really crazy. Like famous people, like Nora Jones, like. I saw her for 15 seconds and I fell in love with her. Like certain famous people just have some sort of, she was so nice and so sweet and this tiny little nice beautiful person that you knew was uber talented.
Like, so you're saying if she was pure evil, she has power over you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it wouldn't matter.
So she might be. And she's got it over everybody. She could be. That's why she's famous.
Who is this? Nora Jones.
Nora Jones.
She's beautiful.
But is that quality charisma?
It was something because it was just in passing. It was her walking from the hotel into a shuttle van. I didn't.
And your vibe was like, I trust her no matter what.
Yep. I was like, sign me up.
Wow.
Marry her right now.
I remember 100%. when we were doing Shallow Hal and in one of the scenes, so we were extras in Shallow Hal back in
99
probably.
You can see us. I think you can see Matt at the hot dog popcorn stand. I think you can see you for a second. You can see
you
me
never,
walking with
never,
my ex-girlfriend in the back with like by a lake. They're at a park. Jack Black and
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Jason Alexander. Mm-hmm. But we were at a bar scene and you can see Devin in the bar scene. But that's where Gwyneth Paltrow comes in, and I could not believe how beautiful she was.
It was so stunning. Hot in that movie.
Stunning. I mean, she was the most beautiful person I'd ever seen in real life. Like, I was like, oh, my. I mean, it was like not just like, oh, man, she's hot. Like, I was like, she is beautiful. Like
there was something
it's
coming
something
from.
Beautiful. Like, I could design, like, a art or something like that. I couldn't believe it.
Is that just physical beauty, or is there some... is it not possible that there's something else?
It could be. Yeah, yeah.
Like an aura or like something
with
that
the
you
pop culture. Yeah.
Yeah, but also that. But I guess that's what I'm saying. It's at least like your already awareness of her.
Yeah.
How much does that color it? And maybe are there certain people that are emanating something beyond what you can describe that you can sense?
Yeah.
Is that possible?
How could she not also be, fucked up, like,
oh yeah, because
not see the world the right way.
Yeah, if you got
crazy,
treated mental, that I mean, way, how could you ever be normal?
I mean, everybody in the room might have thought that was the most beautiful thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, if that happened to you since you were a little girl, every room you walked into, what are you gonna be a good normal
person? How about
person?
This?
No way.
Y'all remember Luncher? You remember the movie's about? It's basically Jack Black gets hypnotized and he sees
by
Tony Robbins.
Tony Robbins. Yeah.
And he doesn't see physical beauty anymore. He just sees what's on the inside. And so the lady he falls in love with is actually in real life very
400 pounds.
Like, like morbidly obese, right? In this movie, I just told you about seeing on the set, seeing Gwyneth Paltrow. Also, they had a woman that was morbidly obese. They had blonde hair that stood in for when Gwyneth Paltrow had to go, but was going to be putting on the fat suit and being the larger lady. And she was just there. And I was like, her whole job.
There was a real physical body double that's in
to be a big lady. The reason she got hired was because she was obese. And I mean, she was just over there like smoking. Like, I was like, just on the, during the breaks, I saw her smoking and talking. She was like, and I heard her say something like, to the effect of like, maybe I'll have to get an agent or something. I don't know. This is my, I know I'm just kind of a stand-in right now.
But she got that gig.
I might get the acting bug or something.
Specialized gig. And you know what's really, really crazy is we're on set being extras or whatever like that. Yeah. Yeah. And they come into. It's crazy, though. It's crazy. They come into the place where we are. they find Joel Green there.
Emery's first base player.
They say, "Hey, sorry, would you
stand up?
Would you stand up? Would you come with us?" And they brought Joel back. And Joel was gone for a long time. And then from that day on, Joel was the stand-in for Jason Alexander on the set.
Really?
For the rest of the movie.
Same height and size. They want somebody similar
because he was,
size.
That is because incredible.
He's exactly a George Costanza build or whatever. And so
out of every extra, Joel was it.
So Joel goes with Gwyneth's, Jack Black's, and Jason Alexander's stand-in. The three of them spend the whole rest of the movie together.
Wow.
Getting the lights focused on them. Yeah, they got paid a bunch more. I mean, we get like $12 an hour or just some union thing or whatever. It was just nothing.
Joel's
it was just whatever it was. But Joel got like a $150 this and a bunch, whatever it was.
He made real money.
He was doing something. And he would go stand in the lights for Jason Alexander scenes. They put him through makeup and put him in wardrobe and all that stuff. And then Jason Alexander would come out and say, thanks, appreciate it, thanks. And then Joel walk off and he'd step into that spot or whatever.
What did Joel say to Jason Alexander?
For
what would
weeks,
he say to
he
him?
For weeks.
He talked to him a few times.
Really?
Yeah.
Jason Alexander, honestly, to me, seems like he'd be a douchebag kind of.
I don't think he was. I think he was pretty nice to Joel.
I think he's a professional kind of guy.
Okay. He's just very, he takes it very seriously.
Yeah, I think so.
The acting.
I think that what's crazy, too, if I remember right, I think a lot of those actors have stand-ins that they pay. It's like their guy.
Yeah,
or
but
their
Jason
lady,
Alexander's
right?
had quit, and they just came and grabbed Joel,
or something happened where he got sick, or a family member died, and I think he had to leave. And they're like, "Well, we need somebody."
Like Cliff Booth with Rick Dalton.
Yeah.
Exactly. Almost. Yeah.
Right, but imagine you're Jason Alexander, and you go, "Oh, this is."
You see Joel.
It was totally like I've been paying this other guy to stand in for me all this shit, and they just. Joel, getting, like
Chopper.
Chopper just immediately steps in. So Jason Alexander standing probably lost his job that day. Why would you ever fly and keep somebody, pay him and all that stuff to.
When you have a Joel Green.
When Joel Green could just show up for next to nothing.
So Joel's two opportunities were he could have gone on with Jason Alexander or joined Emory, leave his blues band and join Emory. Those were the two choices. Charmed life.
It's so crazy. Hollywood, you know, Cassie was in Entourage. I think we've talked about this before.
These stories make it seem like obviously it's a simulation, and it probably also makes the listeners think, what the fuck are these? That were these
what the hell? They're
insiders?
No, it's funny. Cassie was in like multiple episodes of Entourage.
Damn.
Y'all were extras, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She was a model extra.
Nice.
Model extras get paid $1,500 a day.
Whoa.
Damn.
Right? And so she was in a scene. She was in one of the biggest scenes ever of Entourage where Mary J. Blige was in Ari Gold's office. And the twins, there were those two twin comedians that worked there. And they like had this big fight in the office. It's like a big scene in Entourage. But she was in a bunch of scenes. But it's funny. She's told me stories about. Jeremy Piven trying to talk to her.
Oh, really? Like actually trying to talk?
Kind of creepy.
Yeah.
A little creepy. Allegedly.
I mean, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
And then she said that the guy who plays who's good friends with Leonardo DiCaprio, was super nice.
Really?
Which he's best friends with Tobey Maguire and Leo.
Wow.
Which makes me think, had she made a couple different choices?
Right. Yeah.
She could be last weekend. Pictures came out of Toby and Leo on their yacht in Spain.
Damn. Mm-hmm.
She could have been there.
Does that mean that it's possible then that Leo and Toby Maguire are actually good people? Is that possible?
I think they might be cool as shit. I think they might be really fucking
people
cool.
Don't like that.
I mean, just
Leo
because you could link,
women,
if you could link through Cassie's read of that person, like if you can go on, like give Cassie some. I'll give Cassie some ability to trust. I'll go out there with her a little bit on her word there. Now, I think Cassie could be a naive person also that could be tricked by people.
She is.
But also, I'll give her some credit on a read on a person.
Well, she
so
picked
if you
up
can
on,
get to – that's something.
Yeah, she picked up on Jeremy Piven. I don't know about this guy. But the guy who played EU, and I feel bad. I can't even remember his name, but he's been in stuff. She was like, no, he was pretty nice. He was nice and was not trying to do anything or be anything. just kind of being nice in the catering line.
Yeah, but I mean, it is a little strange, though. I mean, if Jeremy Piven was hitting on you back then, I mean, he was like a huge star when Entourage was, I mean, it was popular. He was, I mean, he did a lot.
Pussies,
why did she just turn it down? What, I mean, but what?
Pussy's pussy.
What, yeah,
what was the thing that turned her off, though? What?
Yeah, what's her problem?
You know well, I mean? Kathy's pretty judgmental and not. In a way, she really is. I mean, yeah. She left all, she bailed out on all that shit.
Yeah.
She was getting these fucking gigs. She saw Mark Wahlberg. She like met Mark Wahlberg getting off the extras bus and Mark Wahlberg's walking by. I mean, she kind of like started to have this little, not a career,
yeah.
But she had some opportunities to kind of keep going with it. They were putting her in scenes that weren't just her walking in the background.
That's more like, than a lot of people that go, you know, try to make it get in.
Yeah, exactly. She didn't even try to do it.
Right.
It was just some guy. It was literally one of those things where some agent guy saw her in a mall and was like, hey, you have the body type and look of what would do good in these castings. Mm-hmm. Like, not like, oh, you're the hottest person I've ever seen, but hey, this is what they're looking for. And she got in some of that stuff.
Well, my wife was homecoming queen, so I'm not sweating it either.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Fuck you.
But if Jess had been in San Diego,
yeah,
in Southern California, that's
yeah.
You don't know. It's like that's what happened.
I mean, that is interesting that Cassie didn't go, let me just move up to L.A. for a year and just give this a shot. I mean, I made decent money. You know what I mean? Like, that would have changed.
She was grossed out by it. She thought it was all very gross. She said all the other girls were just trying to fuck everybody.
I bet. That's Jeremy Piven probably recognizes that all those ladies are like that.
That's the norm.
And he thought, this lady looks kind of hot, and I'll go talk
normal
to her. And then he got the vibe, and you know, probably
imagine
liked
if
it
you
that
were
she turned
that,
him down.
Yeah. If you were aware that all of them were always trying to do that, you might just make sure you made a one-on-one, you might want to go by and say hey to everyone individually or something. Like it makes sense.
Yeah.
Why he might, you know, introduce himself to each individual.
There's another Joel Green link is that Joel loves the movie PCU with Jeremy Piven.
Y'all remember that movie? That's one of his favorite movies.
It's a college movie. It's like Van Wilder-esque type movie, and Joel Green loves that movie. I mean, fucking loves.
That's
it.
One of Jeremy Piven's first roles.
Yeah,
right?
1994 is when that movie was made or came out. Isn't that crazy? You're thinking Kevin Connolly?
Kevin Connolly.
Yeah,
that's it. He was in Notebook.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's been in a ton. Now, you know who else is in that? It's so awesome. Is Kevin Dillon, Matt Dillon's brother.
Oh, he is.
Oh, amazing.
Great.
I mean, he just plays a perfect. God, like, he's like exactly the bizarro Matt Dillon. You know what I mean? Like he's exactly the worst brother. You know, like
but that's another one of those shows that it's like world building to me. I sometimes sit down and watch it. And we went to we were texting about this the other day, going to Hollywood in that time period. We were there.
Yeah.
In the time period that show was on, we were going to play in Hollywood. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, I was like near that.
Right.
Like I was near that Hollywood.
Right.
And like maybe if I just thought of it a different way, what if I had just done like, you know, could have just gone there and done that. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
That totally.
What show?
Entourage.
Entourage. You never watched that Mark Wahlberg?
It's
basically Mark Wahlberg's story, right? That it was him and his three buddies out in L.A.?
Yeah, but what are you talking about specifically there? You're saying the whole, whole scene.
It was, the show was on from 2004 to 2009.
Yeah.
And that's when we were in the, in it of going to Hollywood and playing. So I watched that show and I'm like, oh, holy shit. I was around during when this was like a thing. And it just creates this like fantasy world of like, oh, wow. Being in Hollywood and what that felt like.
Yeah.
Kind of being adjacent to it a little bit.
Do you think
you not feel that?
I wonder what is it that you feel?
I don't know.
What is
like,
it?
Envy or... Oh, I was a little bit a part of it because I was playing at the Troubadour, like down the street. Whenever they were
you feel it. Like you could feel it or couldn't feel it. Like you were there, but you couldn't feel it or you could feel it.
It's familiar to me. Something about it is familiar.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay, I get what's going on here because I remember I was every once in a while we dipped in there.
And when you went to Hollywood, how did you feel?
I felt like. Holy, like, wow. Wow. Like, this, I don't know. Like, what does it feel like? All right.
That's what, like, I'm asking.
I'm talking about the big dick energy.
You're on the right track. What is it?
Playing the show in Hollywood,
yeah,
and then going to the Rainbow Room. People don't do that.
I know.
Because people it's, and do then you not. See, and then whoever's that is like you, like it is, like I promise if you go there, Kat Von D and Bam, yes, Margera are there. Yes. Like that's it's, where they, if you, right, go in there, they're in there. People,
it's,
you know,
exclusive.
Yeah, we were there with
it,
Bam
it
Margera.
It's actually, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just that it is like that. Oh, Ron Jeremy, there he, yeah, is. It just is there. That's,
yeah,
it,
we were at
like
the Rainbow
that
Room, and Ron Jeremy's, yeah, playing Amazing Grace on a harmonica.
And, I, no, mean, I, all those blur together for me, but every time I've been there, it's that is what is happening. There's this. It's like,
yeah,
it is something, but you feel it, or is it you could feel it either way? Like,
I don't know. Hulk Hogan's daughter was at a show y'all played one time. I don't know what that means.
Right.
Christina but Applegate was at one
Christina
of our first
Applegate
shows.
Yeah. Okay. Like, that's what I'm saying. You're just like, you're in, like, Hollywood.
But,
is such
but
a,
what is, yeah, it? Just, you're just, it's, what is it? It's just we're in a room,
it's,
and they're in the room.
Well, it's weird that it almost means like we're qualified or enough to be in that thing. You know what I mean? Like, we can be there. You know what I mean? Like, we can be there with Christina Applegate, and it's not.
Somehow
it's not,
that makes
it's
sense.
Not, we're not just a fan of hers, or we,
no,
didn't pay to be there.
Christina Applegate's mind, she's like, oh, this is a real band.
Right.
At this real venue, yeah, I, yeah, go to all, oh, the time.
Yeah, Kelly, like, Osbourne.
Yeah.
Like, the Viper, you know, yeah, Viper Room is a small place. I never played the Viper Room,
yeah,
but it's the same as the Troubadour. So any famous person at the Troubadour, it's like, yeah, this is where you go to see bands.
Is there something in the fucking place, though?
It's like, not, we have a blue,
no, juju
mark
in the air, right? But I mean, is there something in Hollywood,
yeah,
that's
there?
Yes, I feel it. I feel,
oh, come
it
on, though.
It's where all
the
room,
I feel it. In the room.
It attracts everybody's hopes. You know, everybody hope in the whole country, maybe the whole world, their hopes attract
there
them there. And then you go there.
And you're there, and nobody gets to do that. You can basically,
right, the shared history
statistically
is in everyone's mind. Right?
If I say nobody gets to play Hollywood in their band, that's true. Nobody, yeah, virtually nobody gets to do it. And,
yeah,
you did.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
But, you, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's cool. I've seen the name on the marquee. I've been there. I've seen,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah.
You played CBGB. I played it.
Yeah.
I did it. Fuck you.
But, yeah, you're right.
Fuck you. Oh, I got a band. Fuck you.
But
you didn't,
but
play
what
CBGBs.
Is it?
You didn't play CBGBs. And right. I'm not, my band wasn't anything, but you didn't fucking play CBGBs, little bitch.
Mic drop.
You didn't do it.
That's right.
You didn't play the Troubadour, bitch.
No, you didn't.
Good luck trying. Yeah. Yeah.
Give it a shot, motherfucker. Damn.
Right.
You're right.
But
yeah,
right.
I agree. Yeah. 100%.
Okay.
100%. I totally agree with you.
But I'm asking, is there juju in the air in West Hollywood?
I feel it.
Yeah.
Is that gay something that's fit? Is it physical? What is it?
It's very gay. It's a gay juju in West Hollywood.
Yeah. It's definitely the first place I went that was just, wow, like the most first time I'd ever had access to, oh, gay.
Yeah.
This is what gay is. That was the, yes, for sure the first time. I was, yeah, like, okay, I see now.
There was an energy there, like for sure. Oh,
I saw Mila Kunis in the Coffee Bean down the street from the,
yeah,
Troubadour. And I was like, yeah, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
Mila Kunis.
That is so annoying to me that people try to, like, I saw Jeff Goldblum in the Indian restaurant.
You
was
did?
Just over, yeah.
The one, I just, know the Indian restaurant you're talking,
yeah,
about.
It's just, I was like, it's,
I know,
not,
what you're talking about.
It doesn't, like, why would they be there?
Because that's where super, they live.
Yeah, it's just super not,
yeah,
right,
it
though. It feels
lives
like they're trying to be seen. Like, every time I see a celebrity, I think,
yeah,
this fucking idiot.
Where's,
well,
Mila,
I mean, why is
coffee?
He, why is
where's
he being where I would see him? That is how I receive that situation. I go, these people are so pathetic because they, they're trying to go to the Coffee Bean to get seen by Aaron Lunsford. Mila Kunis, is that shallow? I know that's weird logic, but why is she doing that?
She's got to go get a coffee every once in a while.
She probably put her sweatpants and sunglasses like out there being seen by Lunsford at the coffee bean. Why she got to do that?
She can't go get coffee?
Why does she have to do it there? That's absurd.
Chain. It's not some hip.
It makes me feel like it's a simulation. Yeah. Because that doesn't make sense that she would have the need to be there.
She would see her on TV and all of a sudden that just so happened you were there while she was there. Yeah.
That doesn't. Right. I just think they want to be seen. That's like Pete Wentz hanging out at Hot Topic in 2006.
Yeah.
To me.
We've been around Pete. I mean, we've done. You're right. I mean, really. I mean,
I'm just trying to put y'all's life in perspective for you.
I mean, I listened to Offspring when I would drive from Greer, South Carolina, down to Charleston to go to college. I'd listen to that whole Offspring record. What was the
Smash?
When I go driving, I stay in my
bad habit.
You know, it starts out real slow and everything. Oh man, I listened to that, and then just a few years later, he's sitting on our bus with his girlfriend named Brittany that looks like Britney Spears but isn't, and we're just talking. That is a simulation. There is no reason that somebody like that, because. You know, I didn't really care. I mean, Green Day was fine or whatever. You know, I don't even know if this you can compare them as pop punk, but I was like, Green Day's fine. You know, they're okay. But this Offspring's really something. But if I would have felt the way about Green Day, maybe Billy Joel or whatever would have been on our bus. Right? You know what I'm saying? Just, so
if you had manifested that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, it just the thing that I liked stood out the most or something. You know what I mean? And that's what it is.
Again, I'm just saying that was some dumb. To me, that was more evidence of, like, what is, like, it still feels fake. Because, like, I just was disappointed in the way that it was. Because it was, like, he flew there on his plane.
Yeah.
To Warp Tour with just a young hot girl or whatever that he was with, and she was an Emory fan or whatever,
right?
So he had to spend his day doing that, and part of his day he had to go on our tour bus and act like he was enjoying hanging out with us. That's what I thought the situation was, and he was just like, yeah, you guys are like, but he came and he had to sit and watch our set backstage and then come back to our, but he had to do all
of
that.
He had to show her, hey, look, I can go anywhere. I'm going to get on that bus with Emory.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was cool, but I felt like that was, we were all participating in his evening in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
we were
in that weird.
We were wingman.
Yeah.
Wingman.
Right. And he had to do, like, wow, what a lot of work that it felt like to me from his point of view. I thought that was really bizarre.
Yeah. I have a similar thing coming up. So Cassie, one of her favorite bands ever is Blindside. She loves Blindside. And they don't play the U.S. ever, right? And she saw they're playing Furnace Fest, and she basically told me, you will get us tickets to Furnace Fest. You will, whatever it is you do, whoever it is you know, you will get us into that festival, and we will go. And so now I had to go grovel to Chad. Is that what you say, grovel?
Yeah.
I had to go, like, hey, Chad, do you guys, you know, can you hook me up or whatever? Like, we're trying to come see. And I have to take Cassie to see Blindside at Furnace Fest. That's my value to her in that scenario.
After all these years, that's kind of what you got, right? I mean,
that's all I got.
Right.
And I was like, well, I guess I should just use that. I know Chad.
Right.
I can text him or whatever and say, hey, can you, we're going to come. I don't want to pay. It's whatever it is a day, $100 or something.
You think you're going to get it?
Yeah, it's probably tickets? $100.
No, I already did. I hit up Chad and he was like, yeah, y'all coming for the whole weekend or just that day? And I'm like, hey, we just want to come Saturday. So I got it taken care of.
Wow.
And in a way, I feel good.
Yeah.
Like, wow, I can do that.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't even feel bad about doing that. Like, I should just get that for myself and for her. She wants that.
Well, it's just Chad, that Fest probably could have used your ticket money. I don't know if they saw.
Are they struggling?
I think every single festival is struggling pretty rough.
Oh, shit.
And every possible thing is not doing good. But there was a big, a little bit of a stink, a dust up about. They said this past week, Furnace Fest put out a message that said, right now we're going to give you all a deal. We've got to get these tickets. Buy one ticket, get one half off. And then all the early bird folks are like, wait a minute, I thought I got the deal. And this is a better deal than when I bought my ticket. Now do I get that deal? You know, so there's obviously they're needing to sell tickets. You know what I mean?
I didn't know this was going to be such a bummer.
I know.
No, no, it's so reasonable. It's interesting stuff because it's like that whole thing is weird. Like you, when you have commerce with people that you aren't just your like subjects that you don't care about, like some company.
Yeah.
It's like you can't. It is a little bit tricky if you can ever give a deal, because who didn't you give the deal to all of a sudden?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's different than you think. Oh, a restaurant. I'm not a restaurant. Like a store has a sale. Yeah. And, oh, shit, I should have bought before. But, you know, once when there's more of a relationship there with a brand, it's hard to give deals at any point, which you seems like you could do. But, you know, so that's weird.
So, obviously, it means that As Cities Burn and Emory are way bigger than Thrice and Manchester Orchestra.
Because we helped do.
I don't know if you saw our crowd. I saw y'all's crowd. It's the biggest crowd I've ever seen Emory play for.
It was big.
And At Cities Burn, it was maybe the biggest crowd I've ever seen for us.
Did you enjoy it particularly? Like, were you able to be? What was your mental state during that set?
I appreciated it, and I was miserable every moment for months leading up to it, thinking about having to do that show. But when it was happening, I was like, "This is really the right thing to do right now," and it was validated by the fact that. It felt like, I could be wrong, go back, whatever, check. It felt like we were the first band of the day to overflow that fucking
room.
Yeah. That's what it felt like. And to I was make like, the, oh.
To take it, it goes to a new level.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, okay.
That happens in a festival. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we belong here. It felt like different times we had a cornerstone where it was whatever, and then like we went on, and I was
where
like,
you're
the
aware
start
that you
of it.
Changed. You're aware that you changed, transformed
the vibe. What was
like when you're aware that your presence has now transformed the environment. That you're like, yes, there we go.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I thought Emory did the same thing because I walked over afterwards. Y'all started right after we did, I think. And I walked.
Oh yeah, that's why I didn't get to see yours at all. But you were right beside me during ours. I remember that.
Yeah. But no, y'all set was the same thing. It was like I was like, whoa, Emory. Emory big.
Yeah, we did good.
Well, Emory, a big band.
Didn't I make fun of you on stage or something? What did I say about you?
A
lot of, no, only like one thing.
No, it was a roast.
No. Couldn't have been a roast.
Y'all had technical difficulties. So Toby, was like, oh, I got time to kill. There's Lunsford.
I started going off. I started doing crowd work, basically.
Exactly. Exactly. You're Andrew Schultz.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
That's who you are.
All right.
Toby's done.
So let's we'll move on. I could do some more news if y'all want, but I know are we getting tight on time or does it matter?
I got tight. Got somebody cutting us off. Carter. What do you got? Commercial break?
All right. I'll do another news story then. Cause I think this one's interesting. I want to ask y'all's thoughts on it. This comes to CNN. A West Virginia woman woke up from a 2-year coma and identified her brother as the attacker who nearly killed her.
Nice.
So a West Virginia woman is awoken from her 2-year coma, and then she identified her brother. Wanda Palmer, 51, accused her brother of attacking her at her residence near Cottageville, West Virginia. Police said that Palmer was attacked, hacked, and left for dead. And police said they found Palmer in an upright position on her couch with severe injuries caused by what appeared to be a hatchet or an axe. Jackson County Sheriff told CNN that when police arrived, they thought she was dead, but soon realized that she was still alive and breathing shallowly. Police investigated several people but never filed charges. And then a couple weeks ago, she wakes up and immediately says it was her brother that was attacking her because she just woke up. It was a second ago to her. You know what I mean? Just was attacked in her mind. She just went, she was like, oh, no, I'm going unconscious. And so she came up and said, it's my brother. Isn't that crazy?
Do you think that's the sensation is total continuity
I think so. It says investigators got a call in June that Wanda Palmer was able to say some singular words, and they asked her when Daniel assaulted her. Wanda stated that he was mean and it was him. So, I mean, that's just crazy. But, I mean, imagine him the whole time thinking, oh, fuck, if she ever wakes up. I mean, he had to think. many times over the last 2 years, I got to somehow kill her.
I can't believe you didn't.
I know.
Try. If you're dumb enough to try to kill your sister with a hatchet,
right.
Why not try to the pillow or the unplug something?
Yeah. And if you're going to go to all that trouble, couldn't you spend an extra 10 seconds and make sure? I mean, how could you be so, like, how could you put somebody through all that and not finish the job? I mean, good God. Like,
that's rude.
I mean, I even wonder, I don't know what her mental state is now. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, God knows she probably lost oxygen and blood and everything and to her brain and body. And, I mean, who knows? I mean, she's probably not in good shape for the rest of her life. And now her brother's just going to go to jail. I mean, during those 2 years, I might would have just left the country or some done anything. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if he just was, like, living next door still. Maybe thought he got away with it. She's never going to wake up.
Still, there's a lingering question for me of what the fuck did she do in the first place?
To deserve
before
it.
That?
What hatcheting? To deserve it.
I'm just saying, what did she do before the hatcheting?
You're saying,
you know,
not so
saying?
Fast.
I don't
on
know
Daniel
what.
Palmer. Not so. Don't,
I'm saying,
don't rush to
what
judgment.
What had she done before the hatcheting?
Yeah. It had to be pretty bad.
It wasn't nothing.
Daniel wouldn't have just done that.
Just like throwing back, like going back to Devin talking about Adelaide dying twice. Maybe he just thought she needed to die.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what was before.
Right.
You know, you just dropped right in to a scenario where that seems horrific.
Right.
I agree. Right. But what happened right before you dropped me into that scenario?
I mean, we're only hearing one side of the story here. Daniel Palmer III, I mean, I don't know.
Two sides.
I mean, if it's your sibling, like,
right.
If it's your sibling, there's something more to the story.
Yeah.
That's not something, we don't use the law, that's not what laws are for.
Was she the older or younger?
It doesn't say. I don't think. Let's say he's 55 and she's 51. Yeah, she's younger.
He's older. Yeah. Okay. Well, that probably rules out molestation.
Well, no, you mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know. So, I mean, it could have been money, but it sounds like they lived in trailers. I don't know if they were like had a lot of money or anything. So, anyway. All right, well, who knows what, maybe. I mean, their lives are just over. What is the last 2 years of his life like? What was that like, your sister laying there? Did you go visit her? Did you, what, and she's just there, and you go, man, please don't ever wake up. Dear God, do not ever wake up. You have the worst secret of my entire life. Just stay there. That's crazy. That freaks me out. All right, well, let's do one quick asking you shall receive. This is a simple one, and it's just kind of silly and goofy, but there's a little bit to it to me. Hayden Core writes in for asking you shall receive, does anyone really give a fuck about Avatar 2? And at first I was like, that's just funny, but I did start thinking about it. Avatar 1, isn't it the biggest movie ever?
Yeah.
Like, it's not... But when biggest movie ever, that means maybe the most people saw it. But is it the most memorable or like it's not in the category
the
most memorable
office,
or
just money?
Like it wouldn't be in the top 10 of favorite movies even or would it be in the top 10 most well-known movies? Like
great
the whole
questions.
World?
No.
It wouldn't be, right?
It made the most money, but it's there's nothing you never think about Avatar, really.
Right.
The largest theatrical event isn't the same as the, best movie.
Right.
Which is why Maverick is so phenomenal.
So good.
Because it's so big and so good.
I know.
Right? Sorry. I always got to bring it back to Maverick But
that's what's so crazy is you feel that way after we told you it's unbelievable. You got to see it. It lived up and surpassed. Movies don't do that. When somebody really builds up a movie to me, I'm almost 100% always let down. I'm a little bit. That was good, but not blown away.
You have to understand that it's not as if a new movie writer could simply write a movie that good because it rests not on the movie, but on its context. Yeah. The fact that you found it so satisfying is a very compound situation. But it's not as if a good story writer could achieve it.
Yeah.
with,
but therein lies the problem. For any reason, Avatar.
Same with the Marvel universe, it's getting intense amount of meaning from its interconnectedness that no single movie could achieve without the support of the universe.
Yeah,
but that's what's funny. Nobody cares about Avatar, and yet they will go see it, and it'll be huge.
That's what I'm wondering. Do you think Avatar 2 has a chance to be also one of the biggest movies ever? I don't think it'll be the most. It won't surpass that. And it'll be, but I mean, it's just because the first one was that. Does that immediately add many millions to this one, dollars or something? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just because the first one. What if it's was, good?
Well, expectations. You know,
there's a lot of expectations on this one. I mean,
but that helps.
Cameron's been working on this forever, right?
Yeah. I mean, they'll pull out all the stops. I mean, it'll get everything it can get. So
what if
it's good? What if it's one of those better than the first?
Was Avatar 1 like that because it did so much CGI or something? Is that what it was? Like, wasn't there some?
It was the tech and the 3D
and
all that stuff.
Yeah. I probably will go see it. You know, Devin will want to. Ain't no way Devin ain't going to go see Avatar 2 in the theater.
I like the first part of Avatar. Yeah. But.
It only has that 82% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like a kind of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Where Maverick has 99% Rotten
Tomatoes. It does.
Let me double check. Maybe 98.
Everything about Maverick was perfect timing. It came out perfect after COVID. It's a feel-good movie. It makes it. It's, you know what's nice, too?
97.
It's not, 97. That's unbelievable. It's not a fucking Marvel movie, but there's a hero. But this a break from superhero movies, like every fucking movie is like, I mean, you can't hardly get to anything. And then that's why it's
nice. It's a little suffocating.
Yeah. And that's why I really enjoyed that movie. And then Devin and I went and saw The Black Phone, and it's scary. And I was just so happy to be watching something that wasn't superhero, but it was scary and intense. It reminded me of when I used to go see all kinds of different movies. I used to go to the movies and see all kinds of different movies. I mean, you'd see comedies, you'd see dramas, you'd see sci-fi, you'd see horror. I mean,
each one could stand as its own.
Remember seeing The Hangover in theaters? That was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Going to see comedies in the movie theater used to be amazing. Everybody laughing together is so great.
But you were easier to impress back then. Do you remember that part?
Yeah, maybe so.
Like that, you know, not only you, but audiences that hadn't been done to them yet. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was like, it was easier. Your quality bar used to be Gilligan's Island or whatever. It used to be good enough.
Right.
Well, and that's what TV was.
And now
was.
You need at least Succession.
Yeah. Well, now TV is Breaking Bad, Succession, Queen's Gambit.
That's the minimum to get you going is Succession now.
Yeah, and it used to be
just like anybody
see,
making a joke.
Like that. Like I promise you, I'm so happy I got to see Maverick in the theater just because all the crazy things they did with it. But that very opening scene where he's going like Mach 10 or whatever, fuck. That just, I couldn't have, watching it on the big screen and feeling the speakers and everything, and it felt like everybody in the room felt the same way. I mean, just
that's
everybody was like,
feeling.
My God, you feel this energy of like, oh man, everybody's plugged in here. Everybody's
is that the
it.
Thing? Is that just that's the whole thing about the, if you write with a song? Like if I'm in the song the right way, I know I'm feeling the same thing as Casey Musgraves. I know I am.
Yeah,
I know I'm feeling what she was feeling because I'm picking up what she was laying down or whatever. Right. And if everybody's doing that together, you know for sure you know what it's like to be me for a moment.
Yeah,
like that's the cool thing about it. It's like everybody felt this. Like okay, I am like other people. If I'm in that cockpit of that jet or whatever, you know that's the same sensations the other people are having right in the whole theater and everywhere.
Right. All right. I got to go to bed, boys. Got any last words? Lunsford?
Scientology.
Cunt.
I've lived through Scientology being nothing. And then it being super big, then it being scary to being nothing. And that's the same way with money. All money, all coins, everything. I've lived through so much fucking stuff that it's insane. Like, I mean, it's insane. I'm doing music interviews again. I did another music interview today. It was very funny. The guy goes, at one point, he goes, So How'd you get through COVID? It's like, what am I doing, God? God, what simulation, Lord, whatever. What the fuck am I doing? I was like, I said, I just tried to survive.
Oh my gosh. And then what does he do next after you go do that? And,
you know,
oh, that's
the same
so
thing.
Crazy.
I was like, man, this is hilarious, boy. It was
funny. So where do you like, get your material?
It was like minute 48, and I was like, what is happening? I don't know.
And then
we don't have to. He's a nice guy, but.
You're in an email. Hey, can you post this article?
Right. Yeah. Can you? So, anyway.
The opposite of what press should be.
Right.
Good. Never mind.
Oh, yeah. That's the inverse of press, is where it's like, well, I'm hoping to get my press, expanded by the people I interview versus the interviewer get exposure to the audience of the interview.
Can you imagine Rolling Stone being like, hey, could you promote this?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like, can you make sure to tweet this?
Fucking cocksuckers.
CNN goes, hey, I know we just did this for you, but could you mind on your Instagram?
Maybe.
Imagine being a band photographer. Talk about the most useless fucking person alive currently. Somebody who takes pictures of bands at shows. Fuck those people.
But now it's
fuck
so hard
them.
For. I feel. I mean, that all is iPhone single-handedly almost ending.
That's what I'm
all
saying.
Photographers, you know what I mean?
You need a press pass. You need a photo pass.
I mean, it really is getting very much so. Like, you know, because Robbie does. Wedding photography, and he's phenomenal at it. I think he does a great job.
Yeah.
His job is, maybe it'll last for him, but he would say, well, I know how to get the good shot and this, but I mean, the AI in your phone's going to get better and better. Where it goes, no, turn left a little bit, put the aperture here. It's going to tell you everything in an instant, and you're going to have, there will never be a need for somebody to take artistic photos anymore.
You know that trend where people used to put disposable cameras out at weddings and say just like,
yeah, we did that.
Do stuff with them and they do that. Did you do that? Well, I just love the way that probably made photographers feel.
wait till you see these.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
They are better though. They're better.
I just always have loved the way that the photographer mentally thinks about that.
Oh,
I've always loved that.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be real good.
Well, I'll tell you what they don't know. They don't know if it's...
It's all over. It's all over. It's all over.